Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. You're listening at CindySheehanSoapbox.com or CommunityProgressiveRadio.org or from any one of the many wonderful people, places, and stations that play Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. This week I'm getting ready to ride my bike across the country from California to Washington, D.C. We're leaving on April 4th, which is also the day that my son was needlessly, tragically, and sorrowfully killed in Iraq 9 years ago. And so the website is tourdepeace.org, tourdepeace.org. We're getting geared up. People are starting to arrive to meet me here in Vacaville to ride across the country. Today on our show, we have an old friend, Anita Stewart. She's going to be talking about one of her Florida congresswomen, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and the horribly elitist thing she said recently. And then we're going to play an interview that I did with Dan Yassine from Peace Fresno about the Tour de Peace. And Fresno is going to be one of our stops. So stay tuned and we'll be right back with Anita. And then we'll hear from Dan Yassine in my interview with him. Anita Stewart, welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Oh, well, thank you for having me.
Okay, well, you asked for some time on the show because you read an article that got you understandably angry. Can you tell my listeners about that?
Yes, there was an article that came out last week, and it was supposedly, it consisted of quotes from the chair of the Democratic National Committee, Debbie Wasserman Schultz. And she had made some comments about her staffers being hungry, and I think she was trying to link it with the sequester issue. And she was stating that her staffers could no longer buy food. They couldn't get a decent meal on the Hill, and what meals they did have available were not of good quality, and her staffers were having issues eating. So what got me furious was just the thought of these staffers who, number one, have jobs, number two, have benefits. They have great jobs. They're living in one of the most beautiful cities in the world where all kinds of food abounds, because I used to live there, and there's open markets everywhere and, you know, restaurants that sell food on the cheap and good quality food, I might add. So most of the staffers are making between $60,000 and $160,000 a year. So I thought by her saying that, she was slapping in the face the people that are unemployed, underemployed, can't get food stamps for whatever the reason, and people that are really hungry in this country, not people with jobs, but people that don't have jobs for the most part or are working part-time trying to make ends meet and can't buy food. Or we can even link that to the senior citizens, like here in Florida where I live, and every day I know senior citizens who have to make a choice between food or medicine.
Well, so you know, Anita, this is amazing to me. It sounds exactly like something what the chairman of the Republican National Committee would say. So out of freaking touch with reality, it's pitiful. But, you know, I live right around the corner from a dollar store here. I don't know if you guys have them there, but, you know, everything is a dollar. So they have added fresh vegetables and dairy, and well, I don't like eat dairy, but you know, some people do, and fruit and stuff like that, you know, which I go over there all the time to get my produce to juice. But I was there one time and this lady was literally counting out pennies to buy a roll of toilet paper. And it was humiliating because the cashier couldn't count the dollar right. You know, she had to count it like four times to get it right. The lady's face was turning bright red from embarrassment because there was a line of people behind there. And how much do these staffers make?
Between I read between $60,000 and $160,000 a year. And for your listeners that might not know, when somebody goes into office like Debbie Wasserman Schultz, or you know, they're at the federal level, they employ, I think the number is 22 staffers. Usually some of those staffers are in their home area. And a lot of those staffers are right in BC. So with that kind of money, I've never made $60,000 in my life. I don't know about you, Cindy, but I live in Florida, the right to work state, which is really the right to fire state for,
yeah,
you know,
we have that in California too.
Yeah, and you know, we don't have benefits here. We don't have unions that really work for the people here. And you know, I've never in my life made more than $35,000 a year living here in Florida. And I'm not eligible for any social help, the fact that I've been unemployed or underemployed for 18 months now. I'm even a locally elected official here and make no money from doing that service to my community either. So when I heard these comments, I was just furious, and I thought, do these people up on the Hill or these people that have these kinds of jobs even understand what we, the people, are really going through? I don't think so.
Well, like I said, I'm out of touch with reality. Another thing I want to ask you, have you, like, tried to contact her office to ask for a clarification on this? Should we send care packages to her office of, I don't know, cookies or whatever, so her staff can make it through the day on $100,000 a year?
Yeah, I think that would be a really telling story if we could get, like, Code Pink or some of these other groups that do start these campaigns and have a wide variety of people on their list. Boy, that would be marvelous to get that going, because the point needs to be made that these people that are selected, not elected, but selected, have a huge disconnect from what's really going on with the people that they're supposed to be representing. It's just, it's huge. And this is a perfect example of that. Debbie Wasserman Schultz has absolutely no idea what the people in her district who she represents, what the poor do, are going through.
And, you know, and not just this, it could be, you know, just a careless offhand mistake. I don't see anybody holding her accountable for it. But it does represent just a wide systemic problem in this country.
Yeah, and the fact that the poor always pay more in interest, more for medical care. It's really become, you know, a surf, you know, it's like the people over us and the surf mentality and the rich making it on the backs of the poor people and the poor workers, and that's exactly what's going on here. And I for one am furious. I'm just furious, and you know, I've spent this past week just trying to get help from the VA, and it's just been a long rigmarole of making phone calls and having people get back to me, and I'm thinking, you know, eventually my phone's going to be cut off, so I'm not going to have access to making phone calls or even have access for people to call me. So this is what people are facing.
Let me ask you this. It's on the same subject, but it's a little different. I know here in California, in the poorer areas, there's no fresh food grocery stores because they won't locate there. And so people like in, for example, inner city Oakland, the only choice they have is like a 7-Eleven or something, where everything is high priced and bad for you. Do you see that as an issue in Florida where Wasserman Schultz is from?
Yes, in many of the urban areas, it's really, really very difficult to get to like a market where there's fresh fruits and fresh vegetables. We have dollar stores and Dollar Trees and Family Dollar. Those are huge chains.
Uh-huh.
And when you go in to those, I mean, I don't know about you, Cindy, but I've just made a lifestyle change. I know you're vegan or vegetarian, but
uh-huh.
I made a lifestyle change, and I'm now vegetarian, almost vegan. I've almost cut the eggs and cheese out, but still partake. But when I go into these places, it's almost like I'm looking at the counters, what's on the counters, with a whole new set of eyes,
uh-huh.
and I'm seeing this crap as poison.
Right,
and
exactly.
And these mothers are buying this stuff with their EBT cards, Cokes and cookies and
mm-hmm.
all of these horrible things laced with chemicals. And they can't get on a bus and just go to a fruit market.
Right.
I mean, I'm in a very rural area.
Right.
I'm very lucky because I'm actually a half a mile from a wonderful little fruit market that's there on the corner, and I get like 90% of my food comes from that little market, and you know, by doing that I'm supporting local. And of course my partner is still a carnivore, so he's got to have his meat. But these stores that the poor have access to, that they can get to on public transportation if they're in an urban area,
uh-huh.
do not provide them with the proper food. No.
Well, that's
absolutely
right. And, you know, even the dollar store, they're selling produce as an improvement, but you know it's not organic, or you know it's laced with GMOs and pesticides and things like that. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's...
And Walmart is the same. Walmart, if people actually took a look at some of the... I mean, they have a huge section for fruits and vegetables usually in every Walmart. But most of that stuff's been shipped forever and ever to get
right.
to that particular Walmart, you know?
Definitely. Well, and
so,
how
safe is it?
We're out of time now. Is there, I will post a link to that article on the newsletter when I send it out. And maybe people want to call Debbie Wasserman Schultz's office and, you know, see if they, you know, can send a dollar or something so her poor staff won't have to starve to death.
Yeah, this is really, it's just appalling, and I'd like to know how many others, I'd like to know how many other representatives have these same thoughts or similar, you know, and time will tell if anybody responds to that. I've been looking, but I haven't seen any response to her comments.
Okay, well, keep the pressure up, and thanks for bringing this to my attention. I may give her office a call and ask her to comment on it.
Good.
That's
all right.
Fun.
Well, thank you. Yeah,
that's
thank fun. You for having me on.
Okay, Anita. Thanks for everything. And hang in there. Talk to you soon.
All right. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
My name is Dan Yassin. I'm a local peace and justice activist. Today, we have a special guest on telephone with us. Cindy Sheehan. Hello, Cindy.
Hi, Dan. How are you?
I am doing very well. Thank you so much. Author, blogger, talk show host, and anti-war activist Cindy Sheehan is America's leading voice calling for an end to the U.S.-led wars being waged around the world. Sheehan's son was killed in Iraq on April 4, 2004. She attracted national and international media attention in August 2005 for her extended anti-war protest outside George W. Bush's Texas ranch, a stand which helped turn public opinion against the Iraq War. Cindy travels extensively, taking her anti-war and anti-American empire message to audiences in cities all over the country and overseas. She has been arrested many times. Regardless of who is in the White House, she continues to oppose America's imperial wars. Cindy, I'm looking forward to have you back in Fresno on April 6th. You and your team of Tour de Peace will join Peace Fresno for an anti-drone action at Roding Park from 12:30 to 2:30 p.m. on Saturday, April 6th. Cindy, tell us about Tour de Peace.
Thank you, Dan. And as always, I'm looking forward to being in Fresno. And one of your old friends and who was active in your peace community, Malcolm Chaddick, will be here with me again. I guess we came through on the Revolutionary Communities tour a couple years ago together. And so we are biking from Vacaville, California, up north, and we're starting on April 4th, which is the day that my son was killed in Iraq. It's also the day that Martin Luther King Jr. was murdered. And we're going to start, and we're going to ride bikes across the country and end up in Washington, D.C. on July 3rd. So we really are frustrated. We're frustrated not just with the empire, because the empire is going to be the empire. We're frustrated with fellow activists who have basically checked out since Obama's been president of the United States. And so it's not about getting to Washington, D.C. It's not about being in Washington, D.C., because we're actually only going to be there one day. The thing is in the journey. It's stopping in communities between Vacaville and Washington, D.C., and just trying to educate people that the wars are still continuing. I'm really glad we're having an anti-drone protest in Fresno on April 6th, because, of course, Obama has vastly expanded the drone program over President Bush, and, you know, he's bombing in Pakistan, Afghanistan, Yemen, Somalia, and other places. But also, you know, he's thinks it's okay to assassinate American citizens using that technology. And you know, you assassinate the American citizen, but you also assassinate anybody who's in the area with the Hellfire missiles. And so we just want to say that these things aren't going to change until, you know, the people step up and make them change. My premise is, if McCain had been elected president in 08, or if Romney had won in last year, then there would be some pretty extensive protest against the wars. But now that Obama's doing it, I mean, Libya, tens of thousands of Libyans were killed in our bombardment of Libya. Of course, it's supposed to be a NATO thing, but you know as well as I do that the U.S. runs NATO. It's just another foreign policy extension of the U.S. empire. And, you know, there wasn't a peep. And as a matter of fact, a lot of intellectuals on the left were trying to justify it based on humanitarian reasons. We see Syria is on the docket. Obama recently just said that Iran is just a year away from having nuclear weapons, and Obama is meeting in Israel right now with Netanyahu, firming up plans, I think, for further aggression in the region. So we just, I mean, so many things are going on, but you don't see very much activism against it. So hopefully this tour will be able to reawaken and inspire people. I mean, we did it in 2005 in Crawford, Texas, but this will be 90 Crawfords along the way where we'll be camping or staying and trying to build some energy for another peace movement, anti-war movement.
Well, that sounds great. I'll quickly go what we're going to do here. As I said, it's Saturday, April 6th, 12:30 to 2:30 p.m. at Roding Park. So people in the listening audience, and we are asking local people to join us. If you have a bike, bring your bike and ride with Cindy in the park, and you can march, and then of course Cindy will be speaking, and we'll have some event at that time. So I hope people will join us. As you already mentioned, our Nobel Peace Laureate President, under him we have U.S. forces in more countries than ever, and 35 of those countries are in Africa. Give us an overview of American empire under Barack Obama.
Well, just like you said, he's expanded AFRICOM in Africa to be either having U.S. troops or drone bases or both in 35 different countries. From what I read the other day, the plan is to have 3,500 drone bases around the world. And so as the as the warfare becomes more mechanized, it's going to be even farther away from the American people. The American people, in general, barely care about our soldiers that are being killed. But that's the only time there's ever any protest is when, of course, when U.S. soldiers start dying in a big way, like they did in Iraq in 2005. And so this mechanized, roboticized warfare is going to make war even more impersonal to people, war and surveillance. And, of course, they're expanding surveillance drones to here in the United States. Well, you know, that's going to be another tool in the arsenal of the police state. And like we said, Obama's in 35 African countries. He's expanded AFRICOM. He's not actually there. And he's bombed 8 Muslim countries, terribly expanded the war in Afghanistan. There's some kind of myth rolling around out there that the war in Iraq is over, but the violence still continues in Iraq, and we still have tens of thousands of Americans working there, whether they're embassy staff or work at the Burger King at the embassy in Baghdad or are mercenary killers. So but the difference is that there's no very little protest against it. I mean, when Bush was president, there would have been a large outcry, and now the media is not even covering. There's coverage because it's the 10th anniversary of the invasion of Iraq, so they're talking about Iraq. But the only thing they're doing is trying to bend over backwards to justify it, you know, to say that we got rid of an evil dictator and things like that. So Obama's just recycling the Bush Empire playbook. I think that what they do is they just say, well, we want to remove Assad from Syria, so let's change all of our propaganda about Gaddafi in Libya, and we'll just place Assad in Syria. And it's just been going on and on and on for as long as we've been a country. So, like I said, until we the people demand it, it stop, it's not going to stop. And we need to transition our economy from a war economy to an economy that is sustainable and is healthy. And, you know, that's another thing that we're going to talk about. We're going to talk on the tour to peace. We're going to talk about the environment. We're going to talk about how this addiction that we have to fossil fuels here in the United States is ruining the world, from fracking to offshore drilling to the pollution that's spewed out of cars. And fracking is expanding under Obama. Nuclear power is expanding under Obama. Offshore drilling is expanding under Obama. The only thing that's contracting is opposition to it.
You're listening to Speaking Truth to Empire on 88.1 KFCF Free Speech Radio for Central California, and we are speaking with Peace Mom Cindy Sheehan. Cindy, you mentioned that we are talking about Iraq in the last few days because yesterday was the 10th anniversary of shock and awe, the American invasion of Iraq. I'm really sick and tired of the pollsters asking American people and media pundits asking American politicians if it was worth it. As you said, this is just justification. Don't you think they should be asking Iraqi people if it was worth it to them? We stopped Saddam Hussein from using the weapons of mass destruction that he didn't have?
Right. Well, you don't hear very much from the perspective of the Iraqi, for sure. I did hear one statistic that most Iraqis think that they were better off when Saddam Hussein was in power, and that was a recent poll that was done. And it's just like when that horrible, what's her name, the lady who was Secretary of State,
Hillary Clinton,
it was worth
or Madeleine Albright,
and a half Iraqis.
Madeleine Albright. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She said it was worth killing a million and a half Iraqis,
yep.
Children.
Yep.
You know, and so it wasn't worth it for my family. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't worth it for tens of thousands of U.S. families who either had somebody killed or wounded or psychologically and emotionally damaged because of the wars. And it wasn't worth it for the entire country. The entire country is suffering. We're suffering in the middle of an economic depression because of the insistence of the ruling class, or the robber class, as I call them, to continue these wars for empire. So we've spent, I read another article that said $7 trillion in Iraq. Mm-hmm. And what could we do here in the United States with $7 trillion? It could be invested in health care, can be invested in education, and you know, promoting clean and sustainable forms of energy. It could be invested in so many healthy things, our infrastructure and jobs, and so, you know, the list goes on and on and on of what we could have done with that money. Instead, they're talking about cutting Social Security and Medicare, and it's just, and that's what we have to tell people. You know, we have to tell people you're struggling today because your country is addicted to war, because your country is addicted to oil, because your country is addicted to profit and the banks. And until that stops, we're going to still struggle. And life shouldn't be about struggle. Life should be about healthy pursuits and not all of this constant struggle. So, you know, we're hoping that we're going to be able to spread this message across the country, and we're hoping that people are going to listen to us and want to become engaged again.
Well, Iraq is 10 years and Afghanistan is over 11 years now. And when Obama or State Department and Pentagon and media, they're trying to keep us telling, I think you mentioned earlier, that the war is over. We are getting out of there. I mean, why should we believe them?
Well, the U.S. never leaves the country that it was that it bombed and destroyed. And so when's the last time the U.S. left the country that it bombed and destroyed, really? And so what we need to, we shouldn't believe. We shouldn't believe Barack Obama when he gets up and talks, you know, his propaganda against other countries. We shouldn't believe when they're saying that the war in Iraq is over, that he ended. There's anything that our country, the government says, or the corporate media says, we should immediately disbelieve it and then check out things for ourselves. That's my rule of thumb. Mm-hmm. Is that they lie, I think they must lie 100% of the time. Mm-hmm. And so if they say something, then we have to be our own investigative reporters. And not everybody can do that, Dan. So that's why it's so important for your show and for, you know, people like us to keep on spreading the truth and speak not just the truth to the empire, because the empire knows the truth. Mm-hmm. We have to convince our fellow citizens here that the government does not have our best interests at heart, doesn't have the best interests of the world at heart. It could have cared less. That, or couldn't have cared less that Saddam Hussein, you know, about Saddam Hussein or the Iraqi people. It just wanted the oil. And obviously, it was willing to run over 25 million people to get it. So, and just because those are people are in Iraq doesn't mean that they had less of a right to their existence and to peace and to, you know, health than we do. And another thing about the country that few are talking about in the corporate media is that country is poisoned. It's toxic from the depleted uranium and other chemicals. The incidence of children with birth defects and getting leukemia and heart tumors is hundreds of times more than a child here in the United States. So, you know, it's a devastated country. We should be giving it reparations instead of patting ourselves on the back because we got rid of a dictator.
I guess there are once in a while people do say things like Rumsfeld, I think, was the one that said it, that this war on terror will last, I mean, beyond our lifetimes, and I think that's where we are. It's going to last forever, the wars.
Well, they will last forever until we stop them. And
yes.
It's going to mean stopping the electronic and robotic warfare, because that's the warfare of the very near future. It's the warfare of today for most of the things that are happening.
Yeah.
So it's just amazing to me that people in the United States don't think that everybody in this world has the same existential right as we do.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's just, those are the things that we have to, the message that we have to spread when we go across the country. And of course, we're always talking to people who agree with us. But, you know, if we can just get more and more people involved in peace, and how peace is so much better than war, the more the merrier. And I think everywhere we go, more people have the chance to hear our message, not just the people who already agree with us. So it's really important that your listeners sign up for our updates, that they spread the word, that they send out our website, tourdepeace.org, T-O-U-R-D-E, peace.org, to all of their friends and family, and that we just are able to get our message out. That's important. We're going to be riding our bikes across the country over 3,000 miles, so, you know, we're just asking people to spread the word so we can get some support along the way.
Well, you don't not only keep me updated, but educated, inspired also. And just a last email that I received from you, you had a reference to a John Stauber article about the progressive movement,
yes.
The Rich Democrat. I enjoyed that article very much. And if you will briefly tell us, I mean, it's basically what he's saying is that 1% is the 1%er that are controlling the Democratic Party. Give us a brief overview of that article.
Well, I think it's good because people are always saying people like the Koch brothers are so involved in Republican politics, but there is the establishment Democrats, and they're wealthy people who are very tied to keeping Democrats in office. They're not so much about peace or economic equality or environmental sustainability. You know, obviously they're just for keeping Democrats in office. So people like The Nation magazine, for example, I think is one of the organizations that he mentioned, MoveOn.org, and these are all run by the wealthy elite. And so the wealthy elite, and they might, you know, have progressive values, like they might be for gay marriage or you know, pro-choice and things like that, but when it comes to empire and supporting the establishment, they're as much invested in it as, for example, the Koch brothers are on the Republican side. And so I saw it happen myself down in Crawford, Texas. You know, these MoveOn types swooped in to co-opt the message. And then for the next year after Crawford, I found myself running around helping Democrats get elected, because I was convinced that if we did that, they would end the wars. And then they immediately betrayed us. And when I left the Democratic Party, all the support I was getting from those kinds of organizations evaporated into nothing. And instead of supporting me, they started demonizing me and, you know, saying that I was, you know, too strident or, you know, hysterical and things like that, because all of a sudden I was still saying the same things, but I was saying it against the group of the people they supported instead of the Republicans. So it happened in Occupy Wall Street. We saw it being co-opted by the wealthy Democrat establishment into the so-called American Spring with, you know, Van Jones and MoveOn. And so whenever you see them involved in it, what they're doing is trying to use the energy of a movement to help Democrats instead of helping the causes that the people care about. And you see it happen time and time again. It happened in Wisconsin. The energy of the movement was taken from a general strike to recalling Scott Walker, which failed miserably. And so, you know, all the good energy of the people is ruined and undermined by these democratic organizations. And you see it on the right. You know, the Tea Party movement, I think, started as a principle-based movement against the wars and against empire. And then it was co-opted by the Republicans, and the Republicans had great success with the Tea Party movement, getting their people in, and then their people just turn out to be neocon Republicans. So we have to guard ourselves against that, and it's good that people like John are writing these articles. Obviously, he did a lot of research, and so, you know, we can, I didn't know about these people in the summer of 05. I know about them today.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can guard ourselves against that co-option of our movements and that stealing our energy to elect Democrats that don't help us out at all, in fact harm us and betray us.
Yeah. Cindy, you have been an inspiration to me and to many other activists in Fresno and around the country. You have been attacked by both, like you just said, the right and the so-called left. You have been arrested many times. You quit paying your taxes. You have traveled to many cities, and you have written many books to educate, motivate, inform, and inspire others. What motivates you?
I'm sorry, I didn't get the last part.
What motivates you?
Mm-hmm. You know, peace. I set out to end these wars, and they haven't ended. So, I mean, I have grandchildren now, and I care about all of the babies of the world, and I think that if we keep going the way we're going, the world that we're going to leave for our children and grandchildren is really scary. So as long as I'm able to do this, I'm going to do it. I don't care what it costs me. You know, if I have 1 million people with me or one person with me, I'm going to keep going forward to, you know, try to leave the planet better than it is now. And so that's what motivates me, and you all do. I mean, I'm just so honored by your support, and I just have to ask you, and you get it together. You get something together for us in Fresno and other places around the world. So, you guys help keep me going, and that's for sure, and sustain us along the way.
Well, you have been listening to Cindy Sheehan, who will be in Fresno on April 6, 12:30 to 2:30 p.m. at Roding Park. She and her Tour de Peace will join Peace Fresno in an anti-drone action. Four of our Peace Fresno activists are going to San Diego for National Anti-Drone Days of Action. So we are doing this action in solidarity with the major action that will go on in San Diego. So hope you can join us. And again, Cindy, thank you for being on my show, and again, looking forward to see you in a couple of weeks,
thank
I guess.
Thank you, Dan, and we will. We'll see you soon, 17 days.
Okay.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
That's the show for today. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you learned something, and I hope you were inspired as always. Wherever you are today, whatever you believe in, I hope you're having a wonderful day. And I hope you follow our exploits on Tour de Peace. And you can go to the website also and follow us across the country, but also support us in any way that you can. As always, I'd like to thank my engineer, Don DeBar. I'd like to thank my producer, Mikey. I'd like to thank you for listening, and my guest, Anita Stewart. And I'd like to thank Peace Fresno for always being there for me and for always being there for peace. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. Peace out for now.